This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is a Friday, and all of that is true, Bill Rock. Thank you for the introduction, and good morning, everybody. And again, we'll be taking your questions at 800-321-0710 before we finish up. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, and you'll notice no snow in the city.
Well, in the city. You pushed it all north, which was
very
nice of
you. It's not our responsibility, and that's where the reservoirs are, so I guess we sort of need it there. I mean, there are places, I was reading some of the resorts out in the West Coast. California had a drought, and now all of a sudden they have the reverse. I mean, they have 30 feet of snow. They'll be able to ski until July.
And their water problems in the lakes and reservoirs should be taken
care of. Florida, the northern Florida has plenty of, I was reading, plenty of water, and southern Florida is a drought on the East Coast, not the West Coast. And
interesting stuff. Tornadoes in Florida yesterday. Absolutely. Listen, before we get any further, and we have a guest we want to introduce in just a moment, I thought that your Inner Circle performance, I did not see the actual performance, but the outfits, you in tights, I mean, it really doesn't get much better as Spider-Man.
Well, it depends what you... Well, it was actually very clever. We started out, everybody thought it was going to be Spider-Man, and we flew in a Spider-Man outfit, but Spider-Man's got, a long ways to go, and you want something with good music that everybody knows.
So you had a technical difficulty.
And so we faked the technical difficulty and said, well, let's get another play. Oh, what about Mamma Mia? Because we were going to use Mamma Mia in 2005, but that was the day the Pope died, and I thought it just wasn't appropriate for us to do a skit on that day, so we canceled it. But the cast love these things.
Now, the outfit there, you had 1970s.
John Travolta.
Long hair and some awful-looking pants and a shirt. Did you pull that out of your own
closet? Platform
shoes. Did you pull it out of your own
closet?
I hate
to break this to you, but not only didn't I pull it out of my closet, I didn't dress that way.
No, I'm not surprised.
I don't remember us doing a lot of that stuff. And keep in mind, by the 70s, I was here working every day. I wasn't a college kid or something. A young guy like you.
I have seen pictures of you in the 70s, however, with longer hair, obviously, which was the style.
What you noticed then, you had longer sideburns, I noticed, in the things. And I didn't have longer hair. I had more hair, and it wasn't as gray.
All right. Serious situation. That's why we have a guest here with us today.
Matthew Eugenie, our council member.
Council member Matthew Eugenie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning,
John. He did a great job in helping us raise money for the disaster in Haiti. And he and City Council Speaker Christine Quinn urged us to give the city employees the ability to check a box and have a dollar or whatever it was taken out of their paycheck. And together, between that and people calling into 311, I think we raised something like $2.2 million for Haitian relief. And now the issue is trying to do things to help the people weather the terrible tragedy in Japan. Not the nuclear one that we're talking about, but the tsunami, the small villages up north, everybody disappeared. And I think there's nobody that's a better guy to lead our efforts than the councilman. He knows how to do it.
Well, that's good to get somebody with the knowledge base. This is very different, however, isn't it? Than Haiti.
It is.
Japanese situation.
Yes. First and foremost, let me thank Mr. Mayor and also Speaker Christine Quinn and John also for inviting me to be part of this great show. I'm so honored, so pleased to be here. You may remember last year, following the devastating earthquake in Haiti, I appeared on this show to urge and to encourage New Yorkers to support the relief effort, the relief and reconstruction effort in Haiti. And we were all in that together. That was a great team. And with the support, with the assistance of the mayor and the Speaker Quinn, we were able to raise a lot of money to Haiti. And one way, it was very easy, very effective to raise money. It was, asking the employees of the city to enroll in what we call that payroll deduction program. That was very simple and very effective. And we saw the goodwill of the people of New York, and I got to remind people that New York is an international city, which is home to so many people. It is home to people from almost all the nation, and when there is a crisis anywhere in the world, that's what makes New York so wonderful, so great. We New Yorkers, we come together, showing our goodwill, or you know, goodwill, and showing our strength also, and to support people who are in need. And I think this is what we should do right now. And I commend the mayor and the speaker also for doing the same thing for Japan. This is exactly the behavior, the attitude that we in New York we should have. And I'm urging everyone who is listening to this show, who is you know, who is an employee of the city of New York, to enroll in this program and to ask their family members also, who are employees of the city of New York, to enroll in this.
And I'm sure the listeners can call 311.
311 or nyc.gov. And the mayor's fund will ensure that 100% of the contributions through the program are directed to reputable relief organizations in Japan. You know, we don't do it ourselves. We send the money. But the good news is, if you want to make a contribution, we've done all the vetting and making sure that the money will go to reputable organizations with low overhead that are really targeting on the ground to deliver the service.
I think the perception is that the Japanese government and the Japanese society is so much richer than the Haitian society. I think that a lot of people have resisted or hesitated to give any money, which I don't think is true. I mean, I think there are people there that are not getting relief that need.
You can always do more. And, you know, listen, it's you like what you see in the mirror when you make a donation, or you, you know, volunteer an hour's time to help somebody, or, you know, help somebody across the street. In the end, being a good person is very satisfying. And for a lot of people, they don't have the time or the knowledge or the wherewithal to make big gifts. But, you know, a small gift, it adds up. I mean, if you think about it, somebody was describing last night, Facebook, they have 500 million users. So if each 500 million person put in one penny, it's a lot of money.
It's a whole bunch of money.
And the same thing here.
Matthew, can you give us a real fast update on what you know about Haiti?
You know, before I say that, if you allow me, you know, I think, you know, I witnessed the heavy damage, you know, a earthquake can do in a country, and also the loss of life, the suffering of the people. I think, you know, the people in Japan, they are really in need right now.
Oh, certainly.
That we got to show them support. Besides the money, that's a good thing to do, to show that New Yorkers, we stand together with Japan. In Haiti right now, you know, the situation, we are waiting for the result of the election. The election was peaceful, was better than everybody was expected, and we are just waiting for the result. They were supposed to give the result on March 31st, which is today, I believe.
Yesterday.
But they didn't give the result. Hopefully, they say that in a few weeks they're going to give it.
All right. Well, we wish the people of Haiti well, obviously, as well as the Japanese. So, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
In Haiti, now do it for Japan.
It was a pleasure.
Matthew Eugene, doing a little work. Let me take care of a little work, Mr. Mayor, as well. A little business. We'll get right back 16 minutes after 21 minutes after 8 in the morning, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. Well, the state did it. Unusuals. First time since 83 they get themselves a budget on time. A budget that I guess most people are unhappy with. What's your opinion?
Well, I think the governor... Look,
I thought the governor did a pretty good job.
Yeah, the governor... Yeah, it's easy to criticize, but there are no good alternatives here. And in all fairness to the governor... I was with him yesterday. I didn't have much chance to talk other than to shake hands at Geraldine Ferraro's funeral. But the governor delivered a budget on time, which is a lot better than not delivering a budget on time.
Closed the $10 billion hole?
Yes, although next year, year after, just like the city, it's going to be very difficult because some of these things you do at once, but there's still both the city and the state have structural problems, that they have expenses greater than their revenues. And in good years, you'll have a little more revenue, which if you're smart, you don't spend, you save and use in the bad years. We've done that. I mean, if you go back and take a look back in something like, if my memory serves me, back in 08, maybe, we had a little bit of a surplus, a little less than $1 billion. But then we used it up in any surplus we had in 09 and 10 and 11 and 12. We don't have a surplus. People talk about it. I love it. One of the commentators said, oh, you have $300 million surplus. Where'd the $300 million come? The city does a forecast of what our cash flows are every month. In December, it is true, we sent checks out We didn't spend less. We sent checks out for $300 million less than what we forecast. Why? Because the bill came in and we had to send it out January. But if you look at the 2 months, it was right on projection. We don't have, our city expenses are greater than our city funds. And the governor had to make some cuts. I'm not happy about him. Nobody, he's probably not happy about him. But, you know, the bottom line is we have $1 billion, something like that, less in education. They've given us a little bit more back is one way to look at it. No, they've just cut a little bit less. But between the state and the federal governments, $2 billion less money for education for the year starting July 1st. And we're going to make that up because we just can't close the schools.
So what are you going to do about it? I mean, so what? How is it
the
going to...
The good news is that we were prudent before. We've had $5 billion in cuts, in recurring cuts. Unfortunately, our pension costs have gone up $6 billion. But we have another program to eliminate the gap, and we're working with every agency now. If the state, and I haven't seen the final numbers that they passed yesterday, but roughly we had a $600 million deficit. They are going to maybe restore $200 million, so we have a $400 million deficit, plus downsizing 6,000 teachers, another $400 million. And then there's other things people want to spend money on. So
teachers are definitely going to lose 4,000 members.
You know, if you can find some other... Nobody's happy about that, me included, me in particular. But we just... It's in our budget. We just don't have the money to have the size workforce we have, and we've got to find the money. And we would have had this problem without...
Shelley says
state.
You have plenty of money, rainy day money.
Yeah,
spend
well,
it.
We don't have... We have rainy day money, and we spent some of it last year, some of the year before, some of it this year. You know, that's... The bottom line is you cannot spend every dime you have in any one year, because the next year, if your revenues aren't up... And see, that's the game that people want you to play. They want you to spend all the money so that next year it would be a cutback, as opposed to not spending the money this year, and so you don't have to cut back. And you wouldn't do that with your finances at home. No business, no rational family would do that. The bottom line is we cannot afford the expenses we have. The expenses are virtually all personnel, but we can work with everybody, and we'll do that over the next couple months. And hopefully, if we can find ways to reduce, get more productivity, or find ways to get other revenue sources, or there are a variety of things you can do. There's some pension reform. We've asked the governor to help us if we do have to downsize teachers, and it certainly looks like that's going to happen. The only issue is how many. Last in, first out is a terrible ways to do it.
Dean Skelos says that he wants to put that right on the top of the
agenda.
Right
on. The governor understands the problem. He's told me that a number of times.
You think that between now and when you might have to make a decision?
Well, if
that
they don't, there's not a lot to worry. There's no reason to focus on it if you don't do it when you need it.
Right now.
You have to tell teachers whether or not they're going to have jobs. We have to plan, sure. I mean, it doesn't have to be today, but in the immediate future. We cannot afford the size, police force, fire department, of any of these agencies if we have a $400 million deficit, or you think of it as an $800 million deficit, because we're assuming that we spend $400 million less on education with less salaries and pensions. And this is the hand we've been dealt, and the question is, how do you do it responsibly? Everybody's going to suffer. But, you know, people say, oh, you know, the world's going to come apart. Ray Kelly, it's a good example. He has 5,000 or 6,000 fewer cops than when we came into office back in 2002. We're at, on the rate first quarter, we're going to set a new record in low murders and crime. Just think about that. The job is not to spend as much as you can. The job is to provide the service you need and then do it as efficiently as you can and then find a ways to pay for it. And I keep saying this again and again, and you don't get a lot of traction, but to sit there and say we have X dollars to spend, let's see how we're going to whack it up, is not a smart way to do it. The first thing you do is you sit there, and you should do this with your family, and you do it with your company, and you do it with your government. Say, what things do we absolutely have to have? Not like to have, but absolutely have to have. And what is the cost of those if we find ways to do it efficiently? And then figure out, okay, we've got this financial problem, let's go solve that. But you don't start with a financial problem and work back. You have to protect the streets. You have to have somebody show up for a fire. You have to have a quality teacher in front of the classroom. You don't say, well, we don't have enough money, we're going to close the police department, close the fire department, close education.
Exactly. So, interesting, as you're describing the police department as the example, there would never have been a motivation to contract the 5,000 police officers if there hadn't have been the financial motivation.
Yeah, I mean,
is if you are as efficient with 5,000 less, there should have been a mechanism, don't you agree, to have gotten to the efficient point?
Well, the efficient point, what focuses is nothing like a gun to your head that focuses right. You don't have the money, you really focus on it. You know, there's a lot of things you do that are nice to do. But if you really didn't have the money, then you make choices. Choices are hard to make. And I think in good times, the city should do some things more. But you can't do those things in bad times. I loved it. One of the spokesmen for somebody said, you have plenty of money, so we'll cut you back. You spend it. That means there's no incentive for any city in this state to act responsibly. Because if they act responsibly, they're going to get cut with state or federal support. So that's not you don't go cut that's the difference between, in some senses, I've always thought what you do in government, you move monies from programs that do work to programs that don't work. Why? Because people scream about the programs that don't work and nobody gives you credit for the programs that do work. In business, you would do the reverse. And what we have to do is focus on those things that are working. And we're trying to do that. All our social service programs, we keep looking. Some things work, some things don't. We try to close the things that don't.
How about Work Advantage? The Work Advantage program.
Advantage program is a program that's really in trouble. The state has cut us back, and we cannot continue.
$92 million.
Yeah, I mean, a judge said we have to pay for another month, but we can't do that. We cannot make up for all of the state's cutbacks. I'm not suggesting the governor did something wrong. I'm saying he had no choice. But the fact of the matter is, if we don't have the state money, we don't have city money to make up for
that. And there's federal money in that, too, I think.
And there's federal money. So Advantage, this is a program to help people get out of shelters, and it gives them some subsidies, if they work, to get a permanent home that they can live in outside of the shelter system. Now, some of the advocates don't like it because they think people should get subsidized for their rents whether they work or not. But that we're not going to do. But in this program, it's really been a very good program in moving people out of shelter. Some people say people go into shelter to qualify. Maybe that's true for some, but I don't think for very many. But most people in shelter really need a hand up rather than a handout. This is the hand up kind of program we should be doing. But if the state can't afford it, then we can't afford it.
If an individual or family has been in that program and has moved out of the shelter into another kind of residency, and they are in that new residence, under the cuts of this program, do they fall out of that?
We're going to not be able to have what we pay.
So if they can't pay it, they're done.
They have to go back. That's, and it isn't that the governor doesn't want to do it. The governor can do what he can afford to do. He's got to make choices within that, and you can agree with his choices or not. Same thing with the mayor. But you can only do what you can afford to do. And the governor, you got to give him credit. He didn't create the problem of expenses dramatically greater than revenues. He's come in, acted responsibly, not always the way I would have liked, but that's okay. Every mayor is going to have a different view. He is doing what he has to do, making it affordable. What we've asked him to do is to get the legislature, and he's the leader. He can get the legislature to come around, to let us deal with that crisis and ameliorate the problems without costing the state any money. So, for example, pension reform, which he needs for the state, we need for the city as well, that would reduce some of our costs. That would let us bear the burden of less revenue without cutting services as much. Last in, first out. Terribly important because we're going to have to downsize in education. Do it intelligently. There's a whole bunch of things that we gave him, a list of things that would not cost the state anything, but would reduce our expenses, therefore would reduce our budget, therefore would reduce the cuts. So we're not asking him for more money. Well, we would love that, but I understand.
Hasn't he lost some leverage on getting those things done?
I've talked to him about it. There's all sorts. Nobody really knows. All sorts of different strategies of how you negotiate. It's a democracy. The democracies, you don't get everything you want, and you don't give everything that you don't want to give, but some compromise in the middle. That's what democracy is all about, should be.
All right, Mr. Mayor, 8:33 is our time. Let's let Joe Bartlett take some time here. We'll give you the opportunity opportunity to ask the questions in a little bit here. 800-321-0710. We've got one line open. Cal's working the phones here this morning. Got to get past Cal. Mr. Mayor, you were up at Yankee Stadium yesterday?
Cold. The Yankees won. It was great.
Absolutely.
I will say my toes didn't recover for about an hour afterwards.
Bartlett was up there with his wife and his two of his sons. He spent about $300 at the Yankee store on blankets.
I took enough warm stuff, but even so, it was cold. But it was a fun game, and a couple times it looked like they might not win it, but they were
the pitching came through. At the
pitching
end.
Came through. They were behind 1-0 at the beginning, but then around 3-1, and then 3-3, and 1-6-3. I think.
All right. Yesterday morning, I was talking with my friend Bill Madden from the Daily News. We're Hall of Fame sports writer. Covers the Yankees. One of the great old timers. Been around. Knows. He was furious
at
the $35 charge to park at Yankee Stadium.
Don't spend it. Don't park there if you don't want to. He didn't need to have to do it. You can. The reason those garages are not doing well is that the Bronx Terminal Market, which is this enormous development very close, has lots of parking, and they, you have that alternative. These garages were built because the neighbors wanted lots of parking garages.
Right.
And
the old ones were taken down, obviously, to make room for the new stadium.
Yeah,
so the new parking lots had to go up.
The Metro North station turned out to be much more successful than people wanted. Now, people drive from Connecticut and upstate and don't come by Metro North. But, there's less demand than they thought. And this is a project that the environmental impact statement said you have to have garages. The Metro North was factored in, but nobody thought it'd be as successful. The people is built with private money, some guaranteed bonds from the city. The city has no downside. If they were to go bankrupt, doesn't hurt us. It wouldn't be good for the project and for going. If they're profitable, we get a share of the profits.
So it's run by somebody else.
It's not run by the Yankees. It's a Bronx Parking Development Corporation, and.
All right. Well,
debt service is secured by the parking revenues, so they're trying to get. If they charge too much, nobody's going to use it, and if they don't charge enough, they go bankrupt.
They will change their ways.
It's not been a good project for the developer,
and that's why the price. Well, we'll see what happens up there. Speaking of things, numbers, the census. Last week we made a big deal about the census, and I know the Chuck Schumer, a lot of people have, not just here. What is I understand that you've filed officially.
Yes.
Some sort of action.
You can contest arguing that there were procedural mistakes. It will not change the numbers that are used to allocate congresspeople and state representatives, though that's fixed by law. But in terms of the numbers that would let you qualify for various federal and state programs, those numbers could be changed. And we make the argument that it just can't be. There's just too much new housing in Queens. They can't have grown by 1,000 people. And we have some good numbers. Births and deaths, for example. The number of births in New York City exceeded the number of deaths over the last 10 years by 600,000. Now, there are people that move out of the city. There are people that move into the city. We're a gateway. That's always been the case. People come here and then go out, go west, young man, although fewer go because the city is safer and the schools are better and cleaner and it's more exciting. And, it's more, and in a relative sense, other people have had economic problems worse than ours. But I talked to the census people and we're filing whatever papers and, I'm optimistic that they will take a look at it and maybe, figure out that a lot of the times they knocked on the door, nobody was home. That doesn't mean the apartment was vacant.
And it might have been counted as such. I know from what I read.
Well, a lot. I mean, we had enough housing for 170,000 new housing units in the last decade. The average housing unit in New York City has something like 2.6 people. So you have to have a bigger population.
One would certainly think. I read that you were as surprised as I was when I read that was it the feds have given the electric generation people the right to raise the rates by some 12% on residential, 14% on business?
I read it this morning, and I have it on my list when I get back to City Hall to try to find out what's that all about.
Because it seems to have been a completely out of thin air.
You were surprised? I was surprised. Yeah. Look, these utilities have to be profitable or they can't raise money and can't improve the service. But it's also very hard on people and businesses to pay higher energy costs. With oil going up, now keep in mind, oil isn't generally used to generate electricity. It's used for your car. But the whole energy package keeps going up. If oil goes up, some of the other sources of energy go up, including those that power the lights in your home and in this building. And it's a pretty big increase. On what basis it was given, it's easy to criticize.
Part of the problem is, as I understand it, that there are laws, rules that guarantee providers a certain percentage of return on their investment, and when that changes, the rates go up because the return is not.
Yeah, I mean, if they can't earn a return, they can't raise the money, and they can't. You know, it's easy to say, oh, don't. But we're not going to walk away from our use of energy. What we can do is do it more efficiently, and we keep trying to do those things. Use less energy, and it makes the problem less of a problem. And so all of those, and people say, oh, that greeny stuff, that environmental stuff. Well, you can think of it as that, but another way to think of it is short term, it's reducing your energy bill. For example, if you paint, and we have the program for volunteers to help, paint the roofs of buildings in New York City white. If you paint them white, they reflect off the sun in the summer. They do it in the winter as well, but there's not much sun. In the summer, there's a lot of sun. Reflect that off. The cost of cooling the building, your energy costs can go down like something like 20-25%.
I've always wondered why things like that are not part of a code, a building code.
You can do some. I don't know whether you can. It's actually, if you look at the city from the air, you'd be shocked at how many people are smart enough to do that. And then you see one building in the middle of the block not, and you think, what on earth are they thinking about? You know, the whole issue of making sure that we have enough energy during the summer months. There's something called the New York Independent System Operator. They set the rates for power generation and that sort of thing. And last year, this year I think it was the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, which regulates energy around the country, rejected the state's proposal and offered a 50% increase in the capacity rate. It's extra energy costs equated to more than 10% increase in the average New Yorker's bill. That's what they did. Why they did it, I don't know. We've got to take a look at it. It's not, the increase we don't think is necessary to reimburse producers. We think it's a windfall. We don't think it has any benefit to New Yorkers. We think it's going to drive up energy costs. But the bottom line is the energy producers have gotten this, and we've got to sit and work with Schumer and other energy stakeholders and try to get it changed. And we've asked the commission, I think, already to reconsider, but I'll see where that stands when I get back to City Hall afterwards.
All right. I thought it interesting when the president spoke this week about energy that one of his proposals was, and one of his directives is he has directed his agencies over the next 4 years, I think, to turn to all alternate energy vehicles, whether that be alternate fuel.
Well, we're trying to do that in the city.
I know, I understand you.
There's a lot. You see hybrid buses. The MTA has done a good job.
I see your cars. Cars. Prius.
The trouble is we have a problem and we can't insist on it.
You can't.
Yeah, but that's just the law. That's why we want the law changed. And Gillibrand's actually been working pretty hard to try to get that done. But nevertheless... Yeah. Here's what it is.
But that's where everybody's going. Tell me about the Parks Department. You talked about pension reform. One of the things that is being attempted, from what I can read, in the Parks Department is Adrian Venapi is trying to encourage some people to retire but still work.
Well, if somebody retires and they get a pension and takes a job in the private sector, they get their pension and they earn their money. Our pension system does not say if you make money elsewhere, your pension gets reduced. Some people would argue that's what we should. It doesn't. And we're not going to change that. That's not going to happen in our lifetime. So forget about it. The question, I guess, is if you retire with your pension and go to work elsewhere, would we be better off as a city? If you retired, got your pension, and work part-time for us. You can argue it's double dipping, But if you get over this issue of pensions not going to go down, if you double dip, what's the second dip, whether it's in our pond or somebody else's pond?
And by working part-time, your pension does not change. It does not get bigger.
Right, you could do that. So there are some things. Look, Benepee is trying to come up with ways for the Parks Department to spend less. Why? Because the Parks Department budget is going to be cut along with police, fire, education, and everything else. Let me come back to it again and again. Our expenses exceed our revenues. Nobody wants to pay more. And when you cut back, nobody's happy about it. And we've got to figure out some ways to thread that needle of making sure, in the case of parks, that we keep building new parks, that we keep our parks clean and safe and exciting. And that's one of the reasons people come to the city and we have an economy. And Benepee, some things he'll try will work, some won't. You know, he's at least trying.
As you can see, a full bank of phones, Mr. Mayor. We'll get to those in just a second, 5 before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, we've got a bunch of phone calls. If you want to pick up your headphone there, we will start with Frank. Frank, you're up with the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for
Good
taking
morning,
my
Frank.
Call. Governor Christie's had some problems with the way he funds education, and I think the courts told him that he has to rethink this. Seems to me that every child in New York State, regardless of where they live, should get the same amount of tax dollars per pupil.
What's your question?
Why isn't the mayor suing the governor to get a fair distribution of state funds for education?
Well, we don't think legally we would win a battle like that. The state does have the right to give different amounts to different counties. And New York City does, in all fairness, we spend more per capita than most other counties in New York, and in fact, most other places in the country. But, you know, you say every kid should get the same amount. There are all sorts of federal and state mandates. English language learners, special ed kids get a very much greater subsidy because they have much bigger problems. That's the theory behind it. And, I'm not sure I disagree with that. In some places, kids who come from very poor families get free lunches, in other cases they don't. We try to help parochial private schools with the busing and nurses and books, those things. The separation of church and state, we can't do the kind of subsidies that parochial schools and other religious-based schools, faith-based schools would like to do. But the bottom line is we cannot sue the state over this. We've looked at that. And just the state legislature does have the right to cut us more. I don't think it's fair. And the ways, Frank, for you to fix that is call your state assembly person or your state senator and say, you know, I'm a voter and I don't want this. And I elected you and your job is to get us the fair share. The governor's got to make decisions, but the governor does it within the constraints of what he can negotiate. And that's why we have senators and assembly people from all different parts of the city so that they can represent different parts of the city and all different parts of the state.
All right. Let's go on to 9-5 and Martin. Martin, you've got the mayor. What's your question? Please get right to it.
Okay. The first thing I'd like to share with you, I'm now collaborating with the Robinson Cano Foundation in the Dominican Republic.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, and we hope to transform the whole country through education. Now, getting back to New York City and New York State, I recently told the governor's office that we really should be putting the gang members into GED testing seats, and I'm not talking about preparation. GED testing seats faster than anybody in the state.
You know, Martin, the trouble is a lot of these kids, it's so hard to reach them and get them to come to school. If we could get them to come to school, then we have a chance. The real sad thing is a lot of these kids come from broken families. There's no parent at home to beat them over the head and say, you will go to school, you will come back with decent grades, or you're grounded. That's the way the rest of our age grew up. And so they don't have the support services. Some of these kids have fallen off a cliff, and getting them back into the program is very difficult, and we're working at it. If you could get them to come to school and get a GED, their prospects would be a heck of a lot better. They'll live longer and be in charge of their own destiny. Problem is how you get them there. So
you got a tweet that you want to do?
Sure. I mean, this one, I'm not sure whether it's a. What's today's date?
April 1st.
What happens on April 1st?
Fool's Day.
Well, that may be, but this guy writes, it's a fringe idea, but given the state budget, what about New York City seceding from New York State? You'd have to have think about it. You'd have to have a constitutional amendment to the federal constitution to go from 50 states to 51. I don't think the state legislature, which would have to approve it, would do it because we send more money to the other
states. Put them right out of business.
We send money to Albany. They distribute it to the other states. Now, there are a couple of other wealthy communities that do it, too. But, you know, that's not going to happen. But I don't know if it was meant as April Fool. It is an idea. Incidentally, when the Tweed Courthouse was built, I'm told, originally, it was to be a state capital. They had the idea of seceding. Uh-oh. When they realized that wasn't going to happen, they turned it into a courthouse.
Al, very quickly, your question for the mayor. Al? Al's not there.
Right.
Okay, sorry, Al. Well, we're almost out of time.
We're almost out of time. You know, it's the city is we're going to have some tough times here, but we're still doing better than other people. I think it's easy to forget that in spite of all of the problems, we never went into the recession as far as anybody thought we would. We went into it later. We came out of it, not totally, but we're still coming out. It's a part of it's that diversification, lots of industries in addition to finance, but tourism has created an enormous number of jobs. And let's get back to when we talk about downsizing. The 330,000 or whatever the number is, people that work for the city do a pretty darn good job.
Mr. Mayor, keep up your good job, and we will talk with you next week. Enjoy yourself. Have a good week.